Hello, and welcome to the New World Witchery Folk Magician's Notebook episode for August 2023. These are short monthly episodes that will offer a brief overview of folk magical topics and information that might be useful to you over the coming month. As always, we highly recommend that you also pick up a copy of a reputable and reliable almanac for folk magic, such as the Witch's Almanac, Llewellyn's Witch's Datebook, or your local farmer's almanac.
Let's take a look at the moon for August 2023. We get two full moons this August. Our first full moon falls on August 1st in the sign of Aquarius, and is sometimes called the corn moon. Our second full moon falls on August 30th in Pisces and is known as a blue moon, as in once in a. The new moon will rise on Wednesday, August 16th in the sign of Virgo. As already mentioned, it's a blue moon month. That means we start off the month with the full moon on the 1st in the sign of Aquarius. This is an auspicious time for harvesting your herbs and using them fresh or preparing them for long-term uses like drying or bundling. Over the course of the first week of August, the moon progresses through Pisces on the 2nd through 4th and Aries on the 5th and 6th, making it a time to water and feed your plants and your spirits early on, with an emphasis on fire-based workings as you reach the first quarter moon. It's also a good time to begin any canning projects you may have for the end of summer as well. The first quarter moon falls on the 8th as the moon enters Taurus, but it continues to wane in Gemini on the 9th through the 11th, another good time for herb harvesting, as well as spells for things like job success or personal growth, and Cancer on the 12th through 14th. Put in any fall crops you might want to grow by this time to ensure maximum flourishing. But don't forget, since the moon is waning, you may want to focus on pest banishment and control as part of the work. That goes for spell work in life, too. Set goals for projects with your spells, but also use that waning moon energy to protect that work, too. This is a peak time to watch the Perseid meteor shower as well. It's one of the most spectacular and regular meteor showers in the Northern Hemisphere, and you can see up to 100 meteors per hour in some cases. The moon is new on the 16th in Virgo, just after passing through glorious Leo, which can be a good time to take stock of current spells and get rid of old ingredients while also preparing new spell materials. Make sure your canning is done before this date, or wait until the moon shifts into Sagittarius near the end of the month. The 17th and 18th see the moon growing in Virgo, so if you need to plan and organize, or do long-term strategic spell work, like spells to work on living situations or long-term relationships, this is a good time to do that. The moon will then shift into Libra, making it a good time for pruning flowers and vining crops, or doing other cut-and-clear type work to remove magical hazards and harm. From the 21st through the first quarter moon on the 24th, the moon will be waxing in Scorpio, making it a great time to do spell work that requires a lot of sensual energy, or to plant and feed root crops like potatoes or bulbs. This is also when the sun enters Virgo, so make sure you've got your back-to-school shopping list ready and get all the organizing, writing, and planning tools your heart desires. And of course, Mercury goes retrograde on the 23rd, so plan accordingly. Or just hide if you need to. The month ends with the moon continuing to grow in the signs of Sagittarius, Capricorn, and Aquarius as a good time to can and preserve or do home protection work. We get our blue moon on Wednesday, August 30th, also my birthday, in Pisces, making it an excellent time for divinatory dreams, visits with the other world, or any water-based magical work you might have. And don't forget to make a wish, too.
Now we'll take a look at cards, divination, and proverbs for the month. Each month, Lane and I will pull a card for each other, one playing card and one tarot or oracle card. We'll indicate the meaning of those cards in general and then read them for the other person specifically as a way to get a sense of how they are read in actual practice. Our playing card for the month is the Two of Diamonds. This card is the Little Bird That Told Me. It's an information exchange or exchange of funds, a fleeting bit of good news or gossip or a little windfall that helps you get something that you've been wanting, although not necessarily enough to make any major needs get met. It's a pleasant diversion, and it may be the beginnings of a snowball effect that can grow if you use this information or seed money judiciously, but don't overthink it either. Sometimes you're just getting a bit of trivia that may come back or may not, and may be useful in a long time to come. In this case, I'd say that the card is saying that there will be some exciting news in the near future for Lane. but that the news should be taken with a grain of salt until something more substantial appears to help it be meaningful.
For Corey's reading this month, I pulled a tarot card and ended up with the Eight of Cups. On the Rider-Waite deck, there is a figure climbing a rocky hill by a body of water. They face away from us, a walking stick in their hand, while the moon shines down on them. In the foreground are eight cups, stacked five on the bottom and three on top of them. It seems to suggest an abandonment of things that no longer work for us, as seen by the figure moving to higher ground. But notice that all of the cups are still upright, signifying hope and taking care of yourself by knowing when to leave. It's okay to leave a situation that no longer fulfills you.
Our folk divination method of the month, canning jar fortune telling. This passage is adapted from her forthcoming book, Conjuring the Commonplace, A Guide to Everyday Enchantment and Junk Drawer Magic. Witches never have enough jars, right? If you're already doing some canning and have a few extra jars and bottles around, you can actually use those to do some divination. For example, think about a magic eight ball. After all, what is a magic eight ball if not a round, black plastic jar full of liquid and a little fortune-telling dye inside? You could easily make your own variation on this by putting distilled water in a jar with a bit of rubbing alcohol to keep it relatively sterile, then adding a die or dice of your choosing. Gaming dice like those used in tabletop role-playing, such as D20s or D16s, work well for this. You could connect them to things like the I Ching with its 64 hexagrams, and whichever numbers appear up after shaking could correspond to a particular passage. You'll want to invert the jar and use the bottom as the peephole for this, since the top is sealed with a lid. You could create your own set of meanings through trial and error, or use numerology to interpret what you get. Beyond an improvised magic 8-ball approach, there's a lot of other ways to use jars and bottles for divination. 1. You could take a jar of fresh spring water or dew outside on the morning of May 1st without speaking and hold it up to the light. The image of your future lover or lovers should appear within. 2. Take dried peas or beans, soak them briefly and dry them off, then place them in a jar while making a wish and sealing them up. If they sprout in the bottle, your wish will come true, but if they rot, it won't. 3. While opening a can or jar of fruit, if some of the juice splashes on your face, it means good luck or money will come your way soon. 4. It's also considered a sign of good luck if you drop a jar or bottle and it doesn't break. This may be because you don't have a mess to clean up, among other reasons. However, if you drop a jar of vinegar or milk and it breaks, you should expect bad luck soon. 5. If you keep a piece of camphor in a jar, you can predict the weather. When the jar gets cloudy, it tells you a storm is moving in. 6. One love divination involves putting a snail into a glass jar and leaving it overnight. In the morning, you can look at the trail where the snail climbed around the jar, and it should reveal the initial of a future lover or spouse. And 7. Another love divination says to write a love letter and put it into a bottle. Toss the bottle into running water, and whoever finds it will be your true love. There are a few great tales of using jars in divination, too. One story from African-American lore speaks of a man learning whether or not he had the power to conjure, or do magic, by carrying around a piece of devil's shoestring root on his shoulder with a little jar held close underneath. He would then walk around someone's house and speak blessings or curses, and if the root slipped off of his shoulder into the jar, it meant he was destined to become a conjure worker. This was especially true if the root changed color when it went into the jar. And finally, British cunning person Bridget Biddy Early was known to keep a little blue bottle on hand full of some mysterious liquid. She would hold it up to a person and use it to diagnose any illnesses they might have, magical or otherwise, and then to help find a treatment for them if one could be had. That isn't all that far from the story of Soldier Jack found in various European fairy tales, in which Jack is given a similar bottle that lets him see if someone will live or die and then use a magical herb to help treat them. So whether you're shaking up dice or mixing up mysterious liquids, you hopefully have some brand new, shiny, magical ideas to try out. Our witch's proverb of the month. Winter will ask what you did during the summer. A proverb from Romania. No! Our folktale of the month comes from The Silver Bullet by Hubert J. Davis. The devil, a beetle, and a bleeding toe. Rindy Sue Ghost was a dried-up, snaggle-toothed, peculiar old woman with stringy white hair and eyes like a snake. She lived over near Indian Rock Creek with her husband Gary Ben Ghost in a dirty, dark log cabin. One night during the dark of the moon in the dog days of summer, Clint Hill and Jeff Thorne were out in the woods hunting and they treed a coon. The weather turned bad and it took them quite a spell to get the coon out of the tree. It was late, near midnight, and they were on their way home when they met Rindy Sue Ghost. According to Clint, "We might and I run smack dab into her. She was jogging along so fast with her head in the clouds. She didn't see us, so me and Jeff sneaked right quiet like behindst her through the woods. She went way back on Wolf's Head Ridge. When she came to a stooping birch tree, she stopped, picked up a stick and drawed on the ground a big ring round that tree. Then she made a cross in the ring and said some mumble jumble such as we never heard afore. Then she heisted her dress to her knees and started to dance. She danced for about 5 minutes and then made a beeline towards her cabin. Now, me and Jeff both heard that if a woman wants to be a witch, she goes to a birch tree and dances with the devil, and he'd come and dance and he'll make a person a witch. So we allowed something was in the wind, and we figured we'd watch her. Well, for the next 12 nights, she came to that same white birch tree to make a cross in the ring, dance for a spell, and then go back to her place. Then on the 13th night, she put a cross in the ring and danced just after midnight like she'd done the other 12 nights. Except this time she didn't go home. She brung a black hen with her, and after the dance, she slit the hen's neck and let the blood spurt out against the tree trunk. Then she threw the dead hen fur back in the woods as she could. When it landed, the devil stepped out of behind the tree. Neither me nor Jeff never seed the devil. We couldn't believe our eyes, but it must have been him because he had horns just above his ears, feet like hooves like a deer, he had a long tail like a cow, and fiery eyes that looked like two boiled eggs. Jeff and me was scared stiff, and we was a-shaking in our boots, but we just stayed there to see what was going on. First, Rindy Sue cut her finger with a knife, and when it started to bleed, she opened a little Bible and appeared to write something in it with the blood from her finger. Then the devil nipped her on the left shoulder to give her a witch mark so she could suckle her familiar. Rindy Sue swore to give her soul to the devil and to work for him for the rest of her born days. Then the devil danced with her and they went into the woods behind that tree. And Rindy Sue took off towards her cabin. Well, 3 days after this happened, old Jonas Spurkey, the most ornery, wicked old codger that had ever been around here, died. Bless my soul if Rindy Sue Ghost wasn't the first to show up for his wake. Now, she was carrying a little medicine bottle in her hand and she wouldn't let nobody see what was in it. We've been told that if somebody was got to be a witch, the most wicked one round would die in 3 days' time. Then his soul would go into a frog, a rat, a cat, or a beetle, and this varmint with the wicked soul would be the witch's familiar. Now, me and Jeff figured maybe Rinda Sue had a beetle in that bottle, and old Jonas, his soul was going into her beetle. After Jonas's funeral, Rinda Sue got to going from one place to another and borrowing something. She borrowed some spice from Granny Bond, and right away Granny's hands all stopped laying. She borrowed some soap from Lil Coleman, and after that, Lil couldn't get her butter to come when she churned. Cy Weems lent her his corn knife, and then his gun wouldn't shoot straight. Old Rindy Sue come to my place and asked my old woman to borrow some meal, but I told her not to lend Rindy Sue nothing. When she told Rindy Sue she couldn't have no meal, Rindy Sue asked if she could look at my hogs. Since my old woman was afeard of her, she took her to the back lot to see the hogs, and then she went home. The very next morning, all them hogs was stone dead. Now this made me mad, mad as a hornet. I went over to Jeff Thorne's place to talk to him about all this. He told me that Rindy Sue had been there and borrowed some wool cards, and after that all the cows went dry. We grumbled and cussed up a blue streak and allowed that we'd just have to have it out with her, come hell or high water. So we went over to Gary Bengos's place and told him about what his old woman had been doing. We swore to him if he didn't do something about her, we'd do it ourselves. Old Gary Ben was a trifling sort of feller who always acted like he wasn't exactly right in the head, but he never had no bone to pick with nobody. So he swore to us if and we'd leave it to him, he'd find out for certain if and Rindy Sue was a witch, and if and she was, he'd take care of it. We didn't put much stock in his promise, but we allowed it was about all we could do, so we waited. Gary Ben told us later what had happened. That very night, he started to watch Rindy Sue, and when it came time to bed down, he locked the cabin door and hid the key. Then he got in bed with his face towards the room, closed his eyes, and started a snoring real loud. Before long, Rindy Sue sneaked out real quiet from the bed and made a beeline towards her trunk in the corner of the room. Gary Ben opened his eyes just wide enough to get a good look-see, and he watched her take out a little croc from the trunk and take the cover off and fetch out a little medicine bottle. She pulled out the stopper and a beetle came out into her hand. Then she held that varmint nigh the witch mark on her shoulder, and it grabbed onto it and started to suck in blood. While that beetle was sucking her witch mark, Randy Sue took off all her clothes and rubbed some black stuff on her from the croc. She peeled off on her skin, folded it, and put it in the trunk. Then she poured some awful stinking stuff out of another bottle and rubbed it on her hands and waved them in the air, and lo and behold, she started drawing up, and in no time at all, she was about the size of that beetle. Then her and that beetle just sailed across the room and out of the keyhole. Now, old Gary Ben had never seen no shenanigans like this before, so he was plumb flabbergasted, and he couldn't move for a long spell. When he did get his sense back, he started thinking about what he'd seed and what he could do about it. He made up his mind to a scheme to head her off. He got up, took her skin out of the trunk, unfolded it, and rubbed salt all over the inside of it. Then he folded it back and put it back in the trunk just like he'd found it, and went back to bed. Weren't long before Randy Sue and her beetle come creeping in through the keyhole, and Gary Ben started a snoring again, but he kept watching her. Randy Sue made a beeline for the trunk, put the beetle back in its bottle, and put it in the trunk. Then she got the bottle of some green stuff and poured that in her hands. When she waved them in the air, right away she started to grow. And she growed and growed until she was the same size she was before she took off her skin. Then she got that skin out of the trunk and tried to put it on again. But bless my soul, that salt had made Randy Sue's skin draw up, and it was too little for her. Besides drawing up her skin, the salt burned and stung and made her mad as a swarm of bees. She throwed a fit then and there, dancing and screaming and cussing. She swore she'd witch Gary Ben so he'd turn into a horse and she'd ride him every night the rest of his whole days. She grabbed at him, but he jumped out of the bed, and she kicked at him, but he jumped aside, and her naked foot hit the bedpost and hurt her big toe something awful. It wasn't broke, but the blood was oozing out. When Randy Sue saw her own blood, it broke her witch spell. So Gary Ben made her put her skin back on and her clothes, and told her if she ever did any more witching, it'd kill her. But Randy Sue's skin was too little for her, and she couldn't stand up straight again. After that, she walked all stooped over like an old woman. Gary Ben paid me for my hogs, and the spells that Randy Sue had put on the other folks was broken too, and she didn't do no more witching. What do we do with Randy Sue? On the one hand, she's clearly dedicated to her work. On the other hand, she's also up to no good and hexing the local livestock. One of the more interesting details of this story is that she seems to be able to cast her curses over the animals and people whether or not they loan her the requested objects. In some cases, they do, and they wind up with hens that won't lay or butter that won't come, suggesting that her work there may be a form of magical theft, with the laid eggs or butter potentially appearing at Randy Sue's larder rather than the nests and churns of those she's stealing from. The more severe punishments seem to be reserved for those who are hesitant to give or who outright refuse, as with Clint's hogs dying. I'm not going to say that Randy Sue is right for doing what she does in this story. I've talked before about the social contract we find in so many witch stories regarding how community resources are shared or aren't shared appropriately, leading to so much suffering. But instead, I'd like to focus here on another form of balance. The service of the beetle as her familiar and her shape-shifting to ride it. Jonas is described as wicked and mean, but it seems that rather than dragging him off to hell, he is given a job to do. He works for Randy Sue, who feeds him and rides him out to do her bidding. We have a number of folktales involving the devil in which a person must pay a tithe or do service to him for a set amount of time before being freed or rewarded. It's possible that his service to Randy Sue is a punishment, or maybe part of his own contract with the devil being fulfilled. And of course, Randy Sue also gets to do her witchery for a set amount of time until Gary Ben finds out and punishes her for it, albeit in a cruel and abusive way. He is not the hero of the story either, I'd argue. Witchcraft and magic is about choices and consequences. In many folktales like this one, we see a struggle for balance. Sharing resources is one type of balance, but offering our services in kind for what we have and being willing to pay a price for what we do, for better or worse, seems to come with the territory of witchcraft. Perhaps that's a good thing. After all, better to do magic mindfully and show care than wind up with shrunken skin and a stubbed toe.
We'll finish up our notebook entry with a little charm or craft each month to add a practical element to your work. This time, we'll do the window protection jar. Since this is a month for canning and we've been talking bottles and jars, why not add one more very simple little craft to the list? A folk belief found in several parts of Europe and North America notes that evil spirits cannot enter a home where items like sand, pebbles, salt, or a colander have been placed by the door because the spirit, sometimes also a witch or vampire, will be compelled to count each and every one, or each of the holes in the case of the colander, before entering the house. This may be tied to lore about counting as a way to gain power over those within the home, somewhat like knowing a person's name would give power over that person. Or it may just be a compulsion among spirits in general to count things. Whatever the cause, you can repurpose the counting habit as a way to keep unwanted things away from your home. The easiest way to do this is to simply put a jar full of small objects near your front door, preferably just outside of it, or in a window near it where it would be visible from the outside. You can fill it with just about anything you like, but some common fillers are rice, dried beans, salt, coins, or buttons. The key thing is to make sure they are the same type of object and that there's a lot of them, which makes the counting more difficult to manage. We've talked on the show about how some people in the South also like to put blue bottles outside their homes, related to the African-American tradition of the bottle tree, or in their windows, so you could combine that power with the counting and use a blue mason jar to fill with your chosen objects. If you like, you can even wrap a red thread around the neck of the jar or tie a small, even-armed cross made of twigs from rowan, rue, or oak as an additional protective measure. These can be simple and decorative ways to put a small ward by your door and guard against any malingering spirits that might be seeking a place to shack up and wreak some havoc.
That's it for this entry into your New World Witchery Folk Magician's Notebook. Thank you so much for joining us this month. We hope that summer is coming to a lovely end for all of you and that you're enjoying the last of the heat or possibly the ongoing wave of heat, depending on where you are. We hope that you have had a good month of July, that you have a great month of August ahead of you, that if you're celebrating Lammas or Lunasa, that you are enjoying that celebration, or whatever holidays you might be celebrating, we hope that you're having a good time with those. Thank you as well to our Patreon supporters who help make this show possible. If you'd like to help support the show and our work, you can do so at patreon.com/newworldwitchery, where you can throw $1 a month into the hat, or whatever you can afford, and all of it goes to help make the show a little bit better. Thank you as well to all of our listeners for keeping the show going and keeping it popular. If you would like, one thing that you can do to help is always leave ratings and reviews for us. Those do help other people find us. That's wonderful. You can share around the show as well on social media. That's a big help to us as well. So if you like what we do, just, you know, let other people know about us. We appreciate it. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can do that at newworldwitcherypodcast@gmail.com or at compassandkey@gmail.com. Both of those will reach us. And you can find us on our website, newworldwitchery.com, where you can find over 200 articles on folk magic of various kinds that we've done over the years, as well as all of our episodes, too. So feel free to stop by. Our links to our social media is also at our website, newworldwitchery.com. So again, thanks so much, everybody, for being a part of this, and hopefully you're having a great month. And until next time, thanks for listening. Be well.